Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth podcast, the Hold On For One More Day edition. As the Bengals fail to hold on to the football against the Dallas Cowboys, coughing up fumbles on their first three possessions in a disheartening 30-7 loss. Coming up, you'll hear radio replays, post-game comments from players and coaches, and in-depth analysis from Dave Lapham. And in this week's Fun Facts segment, you'll get to know the person under the pads as I go one-on-one with linebacker Logan Wilson. The Bengals Booth podcast is presented by Bud Light Seltzer. Refresh the game. And here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. It's the greatest thing since travel. I love to travel. In fact, seeing the world is my favorite thing in the world. And between work and vacations, I've been very lucky to see a bunch of it. But not in 2020. Like many of you, I haven't ventured very far from home during this pandemic, and that's one of the things I miss the most. Here's hoping we can all satisfy our wanderlust again in the months to come. Now, let's get to Sunday's game. Andy Dalton started the day 1-for-1 against his former team by correctly calling the coin toss. The Cowboys elected to defer, meaning the Bengals got the ball first. They kept it for all of two plays.
Now Tyler Boyd goes in motion as they hand it off up the middle to Giovanni Bernard. Bounced off a tackle,
lost the ball.
A rarity for Giovanni Bernard. We'll see who has it at the 32-yard line. DeMarcus Lawrence forced the fumble. Giovanni Bernard had carried 829 consecutive times without a fumble. Dallas recovers.
So the Cowboys' first drive started at the Cincinnati 32, but the Bengals' defense kept Dallas out of the end zone.
Dalton ready for the shotgun snap. He has the ball. Three-step drop, bouncing in the pocket, and Dalton will be pulled down. He's going to be sacked. Margus Hunt polishes him off.
Sam Hubbard
got to Andy Dalton first.
He did.
The Cowboys settled for a field goal and a 3-0 lead. After fumbling on the Bengals' first drive, Giovanni Bernard was replaced on their second by Travion Williams. He had three carries and one catch to help Cincinnati drive to the edge of the red zone.
Second down and four at the 21 of Dallas. Allen in the gun, turns left, hands it off to Williams, goes low, the ball, scooped up by Dallas, and the Cowboys are racing it back the other way. The 30, the 20, the 10, touchdown, Dallas.
Wow.
Alden Smith with a 78-yard scoop and score to give the Cowboys a 10-0 lead without having to do anything on offense. How did Zach Taylor feel about it?
Stunned, irate. I mean, that's you gift a team 10 points right out the gate without them even really having to take the field. Is a disappointing start to the game. We couldn't feel better going into this game. And to give them 10 points before they even have to do anything is a disappointing way to start.
On their third possession, the Bengals tried a third running back, Samaje Perine, but Taylor says that wasn't a response to the two fumbles.
No, we were planning on rotating the running backs before the game, so that wasn't necessarily a product. Obviously, like you said, Gio is very, very great with his ball security over the course of his career. But our plan was to rotate all three of those backs.
And with Perine in on drive number three, the Bengals drove to the Dallas 15 before deciding to go for it on fourth down and one.
Alex Erickson motioning toward the formation, lines up as a wing to the left. Now he goes in jet motion. They give it to Alex Erickson. He has the first down. He fumbles the ball. Third fumble already for Cincinnati. There's a pile at the 13-yard line. The Cowboys are celebrating. No signal from the officials yet. There it is. Wow. Dallas recovers.
Three drives, three lost fumbles. Here's linebacker Josh Bynes on the Bengals' error-prone ways.
It just sucks because we know for a fact we're a better team than we played and put on film. And it just, I mean, it really, you know, you put the work in, you got great guys in the locker room. Everybody's been working so hard to just win. And it's frustrating, you know? It's really, 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 really frustrating.
I counted seven reallys in front of the word frustrated. After Alex Erickson's fumble, Dallas put together an 88-yard drive that included four third-down conversions.
The Cowboys have it at the Cincinnati 11. Dalton drops back to throw, fires a pass toward the end zone. Amari Cooper comes up with a football for a Cowboys touchdown.
That made it 17-0 midway through the second quarter. On their fourth drive of the day, the Bengals finally didn't fumble. In fact, they held on to the ball for 16 plays and found the end zone.
Brandon Allen drops back to throw, fires a pass, caught by A.J. Green. He ran a slant. It was a bullet, a frozen rope by Brandon Allen, and A.J. Green hauls in his second touchdown catch of the season. It comes with 8 seconds left in the half.
That made it 17-7 at the half as A.J. Green caught passes for the first time in 3 weeks. He finished with 6 grabs for 62 yards, including his 65th career touchdown. That leaves A.J. just one behind Chad Johnson's franchise record.
A.J., what means more to you, records or wins?
Man, wins. You know, I already had the records. I had big years, and you know, I think 2015 when we were winning, it wasn't my best year stats-wise, but we were winning. I think that makes everything much easier. When you win, and I'm at a point in my career where, you know, it's not about the money, it's not about, you know, all the stats, and it's just about having fun again, you know, playing football. And that's the only thing you can do for that is to win. And it's tough, but like I said, man, I'm a guy that stays level and keep working each week.
What is going to be the number one factor when it comes down to deciding if you want to stay in Cincinnati moving forward?
I don't know, man. I got a small circle. So, you know, my wife, my family, my boys, we're going to sit down and make the best decision that's going to, you know, be best for my career. And right now, we don't know what that looked like right now, but we're prepared for anything.
The Bengals hadn't scored in the third quarter in their previous 5 games, and that streak continued against Dallas. A Cowboys field goal made it 20-7 going to the fourth quarter. A 13-point deficit obviously isn't insurmountable, and the Bengals scored a touchdown on a 13-yard run by Perine with 8:46 to go. Unfortunately, it was wiped out by a holding penalty on Quentin Spain, a penalty the Bengals were not able to overcome.
So this could be the game right here. 4th down and 7 at the Dallas 10 with the Bengals trailing by 13 points. 7:29 on the clock. 3 receivers left. A.J. Green alone out to the right. Brandon Allen extends the hands, catches the shotgun snap, throws it into the back left corner of the end zone, and almost threw it into the stands. That's how badly he overthrew Tyler Boyd in the back left corner of the end zone, and the Cowboys will take over on downs.
Brandon Allen played well, throwing for 217 yards with a passer rating of 99. But on that drive, he bruised his knee on a scramble and was limping pretty badly on the final 10 plays of the drive. Allen did not finish the game.
You know, just one of those things. I just got hit right in the right spot. And, you know, a lot of times you just walk it off. It gets better. And so I tried to stay out there, walk it off, and kind of just kept getting tighter and tighter instead. So, you know, it was obviously affecting me a little bit on some of the throws. It's hard to really get any weight into the throws. And, you know, we checked it out. I didn't want to hinder our offense if I wasn't able to perform the way I can perform.
So was that part of the situation on the 4th down play when the ball sailed on you a little bit? Was it you just couldn't transfer your weight right?
I'm not going to blame it on that, obviously. You know, I just a poor decision, poor throw. You know, I knew it was 4th down, trying to give TB a chance in the back of the end zone, but yeah, the ball definitely just got away from me.
And the game quickly got away from the Bengals. A 55-yard field goal by Greg the Leg Zuerlein made it 23-7, and a 5-yard touchdown pass from Andy Dalton to Tony Pollard on 4th and 1 with 2 minutes to go made the final score 30-7. It was a memorable day for the Red Rifle. He went 16 for 23 for 185 yards with 2 touchdowns, no picks, and a passer rating of 122.6. After each touchdown, he looked toward his wife, JJ, in a luxury suite, and they gave each other the sign language symbol for I love you.
Here's AJ Green.
It was so weird just to see him in that uniform with those colors. You know, Andy and I relationship is just bigger than football. So just watching him out there, you know, watching him have the success that he having, you know, was, you know, our wives sat together in the boxes the day. So it was especially, it was weird, but I was happy for him that he's getting a starting job and show people what he can do.
The Cowboys improved to 4-9 with the win. They're two games behind Washington in the NFC East as the football team followed up a win over the Steelers by beating the 49ers on Sunday. Washington has won 4 straight. The Bengals, on the other hand, have lost 5 straight to fall to 2-10-1, their third straight season with double-digit losses. Here are Sam Hubbard and Zach Taylor.
It's just exhausting. You know, you do everything right during the week, practice hard, and, you know, no reward. And, you know, it just weighs on you. And it's been going on for a while now. It's just pretty painful.
When you lose, it's frustrating, you know, and it's hard to get rid of this feeling that we feel, you know, at the end of every week right now. It's frustrating because we feel good about the position we're about to put ourselves in. And then, you know, it's a myriad of reasons that are why we lose. And ultimately it 100% falls on me, 100%, you know, and it's just frustrating. It's really frustrating. A lot of effort goes into this, guys pulling together. It's still a very close team. I think you can see that as you see them out there playing. We just haven't made the plays that put us in a position to win the game. And it makes you sick to start the way that we started today. You know, as good as you feel walking out of that locker room at pregame, you're sick to your stomach when you start with 3 straight fumbles to start the game. It's just it's a very difficult way to play football.
Zach, you've mentioned frustrating a lot. Just when you look at your record on paper as a head coach, do you start to worry about job security when you get near the end of a season?
No, I just want to win a football game. That's it. And I love going to work with these guys every day. And that's all that matters to me is how do we get ready in 7 days to go win a game? That is 100% our focus. Don't worry about anything else. This is too important for us. We want to win so badly. And we're just going to continue to work and find ways to create those wins.
Sunday's loss did make it more likely that the Bengals will have a top 3 draft pick next year. They would have to win 2 of their final 3 games to fall in the draft order. Now time for post-game analysis with my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. Lap, that was rough, and it started early. Second play from scrimmage, Giovanni Bernard fumbled on a running play for the first time since his rookie year. Game 5 of his rookie year, he had carried nearly 830 times on running plays without fumbling. I guess when that happens to Giovanni Bernard, you know you might be in for a long day.
I'll tell you, you know, I think, as they say, it comes in bunches. I think when it happened to Gio, it was the fumble virus instead of the coronavirus. I mean, it infected the team. And, you know, then guys, Alex Erickson's a sure-handed guy. But I give Dallas credit, put the helmet right on the football. That's a tough deal. The guy made a good play. He made a good play. Alex Erickson fumbles the football. I feel sorry for Williams. I mean, I don't know what Hakeem Adeniji was thinking. He pulls around and he stops. Stops in the hole. I mean, if you don't block air, if there's nothing there, get through the hole and get up to the next level and block something. And Williams basically, Adeniji forced that fumble, and Adeniji never played the rest of the game. And Williams was running hard. It's unfortunate that took place. So that just tells you the football gods today were saying, not happening. You're gonna fumble 3 times on your first 3 possessions. I do not recall ever seeing that happen before. I think that's a first, and I've seen a lot of games, high school, college, and pro games, and I can't remember it. 3 straight possessions. Basically, they went a whole quarter and 10 seconds into another quarter and said, we don't really want to keep the football. You know, the other team can have it. And with a team like this that's struggling offensively, that has little or no margin for error, are you kidding me to do that? That's self-destruction at its utmost.
I know I've seen turnovers on the first 3 possessions, right, but it's a mix. An interception, a fumble, maybe, right, you know, 2 of one, 1 of the other. I've never seen 3 fumbles in a row on the first 3 possessions. That was awful. My gut instinct is, you know, when I see that happen, I think, well, like fumbles, that's a discipline thing. It's bad coaching. And then I look up the numbers. The Rams have fumbled 10 times this year.
The Saints have fumbled eight times. The Bills have fumbled nine times this year. Three of the best teams in the NFL, they've fumbled. So I don't really blame it on the coaching staff. It's impossible to do that with Giovanni Bernard, unfortunately. That's the kind of stuff that happens when you are struggling and have no margin of error.
That's the big thing. No margin for error, and you can't score. You know, I mean, you just can't give teams opportunities like that. And it falls into that fine line of playing not to lose or playing to win. You know, and it's like, do I overprotect? And sometimes when you overprotect, it can be a problem with the football. But, I mean, that ball security issue, I thought it was going to be a factor in the Bengals' favor. Coming into the game, Dallas had lost 13 fumbles, had fumbled it 19 times, and had lost 13 of them. 13 lost fumbles led the league. Now the Cincinnati Bengals have 13. They're right there with them, and they've only gotten three. That minus 10 fumble ratio, worse than the National Football League. They've thrown nine interceptions, and they've gotten nine interceptions. They're even in interceptions. Minus 10 in fumbles. I mean, that speaks volumes. I'm looking at that, and then the other stat that is, you know, significant, they're at least minus 11. They came into the game minus 10 in touchdowns in the red zone. And I think Dallas scored two, and they scored one. So now I think they're minus 11 in touchdowns in the red zone. That's at the bottom of the league. When you have fumble ratio differential at the bottom of the league, touchdowns in the red zone when the field compresses near the bottom of the league. And now you're starting to get trends of they're just not good enough. They're just not getting it done.
Andy Dalton had to feel like it was 2015 all over again. He played well, but didn't have to do that much. Threw for 185 yards, two touchdowns, no picks. One of the touchdown passes was a terrific throw. Passer rating of 122.6, but this was like that 2015 season. He broke his thumb when the Bengals had a 10-2 record. At that point, the Bengals led the NFL in scoring defense. They were averaging nearly 28 points a game. He had a passer rating of 106. This was just like 2015, except he was standing on the opposite sideline.
Yeah, it was. I admit it was odd to see him in Dallas colors. You know, it really was. I think it accentuated the red hair even more because with the orange uniform and the Bengals uniform, it kind of like mutes it. But man, when you're wearing blue and silver, and all of a sudden there's that big old swatch of you know orange red hair as such, it even accentuates it more. But and I think obviously he's got a receiving core that's pretty darn good. He really does, and I do think that like we were talking about earlier in the day, AJ and Andy made each other better. And I think AJ appreciates Andy for that, and I think Andy appreciates AJ for that. That was like, you know, the old peanut butter and jelly. They're good apart, they're better together. And that's what those two guys were like. And I hope, you know, Joe Burrow and T. Higgins start to form the same type of thing. I mean, they're good apart, they're better together. Hopefully they're going to have big seasons like Andy Dalton and AJ Green did. Obviously they're not going to go to the playoffs in their rookie years like those two guys did, but might as well start in year two, you know, and start to build on something and see if it works out that way. But you know, Andy Dalton is a guy that you can win football games with. You really can win a lot of football games with Andy Dalton. You mentioned it more than once, you know, during the broadcast, Dan, that you know, I mean, 50-25 and 1. He had won two games for every loss. Before breaking his thumb. 76 games played before breaking his thumb. 50 wins, 25 losses, and a tie. With today's loss, the Bengals now, since that period, they're almost two losses for every win.
It's exactly that. 54 losses, 27 wins, and a couple of ties.
Just turns it around. I mean, you know, you just turn the whole scenario around. So they're a 500 football team in that span, and it's like before fracture, after fracture. And that tells you that when you have a healthy Andy Dalton who can execute your offense, you can win football games. If you have any kind of a defensive football team and special teams that aren't killing you. But the Bengals right now, offensively, with Brandon at quarterback, it's like, just don't screw it up. What? He didn't screw it up. Three straight fumbles, three straight possessions. I mean, you know, you give up short field, 16 yards, field goal. Defense does a good job. You know, they minimize the damage. Then you're going you're approaching the red zone, fumble it, and they take it back 70-plus for a touchdown. Are you kidding me? I mean, down 10-0, and they've got 16 yards, and you've got over 100 yards offense. You have no points, and they've got 16, they got 10 on the board. That kind of stuff is just it makes you queasy, makes you football sick, really.
It's a dream come true kind of day for Andy Dalton, and at least statistically, it was a pretty good day for A.J. Green. He can't be happy with a 30-7 loss, but targeted 7 times, 6 catches, 62 yards, and a touchdown, his second touchdown catch of the year. He's now one shy of Chad Johnson's all-time franchise record. But it was interesting listening to A.J. Green after the game ask numerous questions about his future. And while he didn't come right out and say, this is the end of my time in Cincinnati, it certainly felt like that's what he was implying.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's thinking, okay, they're giving me $18 million almost this year, you know, and or maybe even a little more. I can't remember if it's 17 point whatever or 18 point whatever, but it's a lot as a franchise tagged receiver. So at that point, unless the Bengals tag him again, which I don't think they're going to do, no question that they're not going to do that, I think at that point in time, he'll be testing the market. And it might be back here in Cincinnati. It might be elsewhere. He realizes that. So I don't think he's going to, you know, no skin's going to come off his nose about it until he has to start to go through that process. But I do think that part of you can't help but start to reflect back, because it could be coming close to the very end of his career here in Cincinnati. And I do think, you know, watching him in the early stages of some football games here when he was shut out, no targets or one target, no catch, he would win early. And then when he didn't get the football, he'd get really frustrated about it. You could see it in his body language that he'd get very frustrated that he wasn't getting it when he was winning. And the fact that he won early in this football game and he got the football early, I think, helped him. And then, you know, when they lined up in the way they lined up in the red zone, you thought there might be a touchdown possibility for A.J. Green, and Brandon Allen saw the same thing and delivered it.
Up next, a Monday night home game against the Steelers, as the Bengals try to end a streak of 11 consecutive losses to Pittsburgh. The Bengals Booth podcast is presented by Bud Light Seltzer. It's light and refreshing with a hint of fruit flavor. Now time for this week's fun facts segment, where you get to know the person under the pads. Time for some fun facts with linebacker Logan Wilson from the Cowboy State, Wyoming. More specifically, Casper, Wyoming. Logan, I'm guessing that most of the people in our audience have never been to Casper. Describe your hometown.
It would be what we would call the Windy City of Wyoming. Although Wyoming is very windy as a state, Casper is one of the windier cities in Wyoming. We are the second biggest city in Wyoming behind Cheyenne of about 60,000 people. So not very big by any means, but definitely big for a Wyoming town.
So 60,000 is not exactly tiny, obviously. Did you grow up in a neighborhood with quite a few other families, or did you have a lot of property?
We grew up in a neighborhood. You know, I lived about, I think it was like 2 or 3 blocks from my elementary school. So I used to walk to elementary school. And then I went to junior high on the west side. I lived on the west side of Casper and kind of grew up with all those people, and then went to high school sports with those guys as well. And then I was lucky enough to play college football with one of my high school friends that I grew up with since I moved to Casper. I wasn't born in Casper. I was born in Aberdeen, South Dakota. And then I lived in Cody for a little bit prior to moving to Casper.
We're doing fun facts with Logan Wilson. I understand that your dad was an accomplished college wrestler. He is in the Dickinson State University Hall of Fame. Is that where your love of sports came from?
Yeah, my dad was, he pushed me to be not only a good athlete, but also a great student. And I think that the thing that my dad always did was he never let me settle for anything I ever achieved or anything I ever underachieved. You know, whatever, if I got any awards or any successes, his motto was always, that's great, now keep working hard. But he would always reiterate that keep working hard mentality. And I think that that's probably, you know, something that he learned along his athletic career. And he definitely instilled that in me.
When did you begin dreaming of a career in pro football?
What's funny is a lot of people don't know is I never even wanted to play tackle football when I was little. I enjoyed playing flag football better than I did worrying about contact stuff. And then, you know, the more I played it, the more my love for the game grew. And I think really once I got to college into my second or third year is when I realized I might have an opportunity to play in the NFL. And I just kind of let it take care of itself. You know, I never really worried about it. Never really stressed about it. I just kind of focused on what was in front of me at the time. And here I am.
We're chatting with Logan Wilson. Your high school is the alma mater of former U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney. Is there a big Dick Cheney display at your alma mater? And is that a big point of pride for students that went there?
Our high school stadium is called Cheney Alumni Field. So it's pretty cool. Having that background, knowing someone like that on that level of social status, you know, that has gone to our high school is really cool and really unique. You know, not a lot of high schools across the country are able to say that.
From there, it was on to the University of Wyoming in Laramie, about 150 miles from home. Was it always your dream to play for the Brown and Gold?
Yeah, for me, it was. I had an offer from Weber State early on in my recruiting. But ultimately, I wanted to play at the University of Wyoming. You know, they had just gotten a new coach in Craig Bull, and who's still there right now at the time. And he just seemed like a really good guy to play for. And as a Wyoming kid, you kind of grow up with the dreaming about the opportunity of representing the Brown and Gold, because a lot of people don't realize that Wyoming, the University of Wyoming, is our only in-state university. And it's kind of like Wyoming's pro team. So the whole state rallies behind all the athletics at University of Wyoming. And I think that that's what makes the University of Wyoming so unique.
What was the best part of your college experience?
I mean, really all of it. You know, I wouldn't be where I am today without anything that ever happened. But I think that one of the best parts about playing college football was just kind of getting to know people from all sorts of different backgrounds. You know, we had guys from California, Texas, Colorado, Nebraska. I mean, there's people from pretty much everywhere, Florida, that come to the University of Wyoming. And don't get me wrong, the University of Wyoming's town is not like it's a college town is the best way to say it. You know, I think there's 30,000 plus people, that's including the student population. So it's not very big by any means. And so it's not for everyone. Plus it gets really cold and a lot of people don't like to play in the cold. So it's very unique. And I think that that's what was really cool is everyone kind of bonded coming there for that one ultimate goal to win some football games. So
your college teammates for 3 years included Josh Allen, the quarterback for the Buffalo Bills. How excited are you to see the success he's having in the NFL?
I love seeing it. I love seeing any one of my former teammates and having the success that they do, but him specifically to be the highest drafted University of Wyoming football player we've ever had. And to be representing not only himself, but the University of Wyoming and the way he has been doing is very awesome for our state. You know, our state loves him. He's represented it with class and, you know, he's just one of those kids that you would wish nothing but success for. So.
You were a defensive back in high school and put on about 50 pounds to be an outstanding linebacker in college. How did you gain the weight?
Didn't happen overnight. It was a process for sure. You know, I got to the University of Wyoming at about 195 pounds and just kind of took it day by day. And by the time I was playing, after I redshirted, my redshirt freshman year, I think I was about 215. And then my sophomore year, I was about 230. Then my junior year, I was about 250. And then my senior year, I was about back down to 240. But it was just kind of a process of eating right way, not trying to put on bad weight and stuff, fat that's going to slow you down. I worked with my nutritionist and it was just a long process. But Coach Bull's whole program is about developing kids. You know, we're not going to recruit. We're not going to get those five-star kids who have already, you know, they're ready to go in and play right away. And so they have the tools available at the University of Wyoming. It's just a matter of whether or not you use them correctly.
Were there a ton of protein shakes? Were you eating peanut butter and jelly before you went to bed? I've heard stories of guys that, you know, had to do whatever it took to keep some of that weight on.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of protein shakes for sure. Protein shakes at night when you're full, you just had to pound one just to be able to maintain that weight. It was just kind of a sacrifice, so to say. You kind of had to stretch your stomach so that you could hold down that food.
You were the first pick of the third round in the 2020 NFL draft. Describe your draft experience.
Not what I expected, so to say, in terms of COVID and, you know, not being able to go kind of be in Vegas for the draft and celebrate with my family. So, but that was something that was out of my control, and I enjoyed every moment of it being with my family and Casper. It was an opportunity of a lifetime, and very thankful it happened. It's surreal. And like, I think the best way I described it is I couldn't describe it. There's just so many emotions that went through your head, you know, and it's just kind of, I think that's just the nature of having this opportunity, this lifelong dream that so many kids dream about doing, and you actually having it right in front of you and just trying to take advantage of it.
A few more fun facts for Logan Wilson. Who is your all-time favorite athlete in any sport?
I don't know. Growing up, because I was in Wyoming, I grew up a Broncos fan, so I was a huge Champ Bailey fan because I also played defensive back. I never played linebacker until I got to college, but I would probably have to say Champ Bailey.
What do you like to spend your money on?
You know, I'm pretty smart about my money, and I'm stingy, so to say, in a way. I usually like to spend my money on my dogs and my girlfriend and maybe some clothes here and there that I'd like to get. So I like to help people around me as well when needed.
Dogs, plural?
Yes, we just got another puppy. So we have a golden retriever and a German shepherd.
What is your guilty pleasure when it comes to food? What do you have a hard time saying no to?
Salty sweets. Like a salted caramel. That's a tough one to pass up.
How about a take five? Have you had the take five?
I haven't in a while. You ever had a whatchamacallit?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Those ones are good, too.
Yeah. I like the combo of salt and sweet. I'm with you.
Yes. Yeah.
That's why I like the take five. It's got the pretzel hidden in the candy bar.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm with you on that.
All right. Final fun fact for Logan Wilson. If you could meet anybody in history, athlete, entertainer, statesman, whatever, who would that be?
I would say The Rock.
The Rock?
Yeah.
For the wrestling, yeah. Or the acting?
I would say the acting, and just the way that he handles his business. Like he's always, it seems like he's always in the weight room managing all of his acting stuff, whatever, you know, whatever he's got going on in his life, he always seems to find a way to, I don't know. That's also from a social media perspective, of course. But he just seems like a very down to earth dude. I also know a guy who was on the Titan Games. And so who got to be, he actually got to meet him, and he said he's a very down to earth guy, which is awesome. I really enjoy being around people like that. So.
Well, The Rock was a college football player at the University of Miami. So a similar career could be in your future.
I don't know. I don't know how well I do at acting, but you know, we never know. We'll see.
All right. You are off the hot seat. I appreciate your time. Best of luck the rest of the year.
Thank you very much.
Here's a quick reminder to join Lapp and Lance McAllister for Bengals Line Monday night from 6 to 9 on 700 WLW. That's going to do it for this episode of the Bengals Booth Podcast, brought to you by Bud Light Seltzer. Refresh the game. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe. And if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard, and thank you for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.